7, Stan Phillips.
Mansions of glory and suicide machines sprung from cages on highway nine, torn with human ticket and stepping out over the line.
Good morning and happy hump day, and the party continues. The Mets now have won 5 in a row, and what a homestand it's been. Winning 4 out of 5 against Atlanta, and now 2 in a row against Cincinnati, with a matinee finale today at Citi Field. But let's talk about yesterday's game. The Mets won their 5th game in a row. They defeated the Reds on Wednesday night at Citi Field, following a 51-minute rain delay. And we needed that rain to just cool things off. Hopefully the temperature won't be as hot as it's been this summer. Whew, it's been a scorcher. The only thing we want scorching is the Mets. So even though the rain delayed the game, the Mets for both teams got off to a soggy start. The Mets put their first 2 runners on top of the first inning, but Red starter Mike Marner retired the next 3 in order to get out of the jam. Carlos Carrasco, meanwhile, struck out 4 Reds over his first 3 scoreless innings. Now the Mets cracked the scoreboard first in the bottom of the 3rd inning, compliments Francisco Lindor. After falling behind the count 0-2, Lindor battled back before golfing a 2-run homer off to left field. The home run was Lindor's 20th of the season, matching his total from last season, and he now has scored a run in 12 straight games. Only David Wright, 13 straight games in 2008, owns a longer streak as a Met. Jeff McNeil entered play with an 11-game hitting streak, and he extended the streak to 12 games in a big way in the bottom of the 4th inning, slamming a solo homer to make it 3-0. For McNeil, a homer was his first this season against the lefty and his 7th of the season overall. McNeil chipped in again later with an RBI single up the middle, chasing Minor from the game with the score 4-1 in the 6th inning. Carrasco punched out the side in the 5th inning, getting Red hitters to chase sliders out of the strike zone again and again. Now the Reds finally got to him in the top of the 7th as Jake Fraley launched a 2-run homer to make it a 4-2 Mets lead. He allowed a couple more base runners in the 7th before Buck Showalter went to the bullpen, and Michael Givens finished the frame with a strikeout. The veteran right-hander came into play with a 1.50 ERA in his last 6 starts, and he ended up going 6.2 innings, allowing 2 earned runs on 7 hits with 9 strikeouts and 1 walk. His ERA over his last 7 games is now 1.69. And just as the Reds cut the lead to 2 runs late in the game, the Mets answered right back. After Reds intentionally walked Pete Alonso to load the bases with 2 outs and bomb the 7th inning, Darren Ruff singled to the right side to push 2 more runs across, making it 6-2. Trevor May and Seth Lugo finished off the effort by each contributing a scoreless frame. May pitched himself into some trouble, but escaped striking out 3 batters. So overall, a pretty damn good game. Now, the series finale is this afternoon, 1:10. The game will be broadcast on SNY. And for the Mets, we'll have Taijuan Walker looking to rebound from a rough start against Atlanta, while TJ Zuch will make his Reds debut. So we'll have to see what the youngster from Cincinnati has and whether or not Taijuan Walker can bounce back from the game he had the other day. Now for your listening pleasure. Here are the highlights from last night's game.
That's launched out to left field. Back goes Fraley. He'll take a look, and it's out of here! Francisco Lindor with a 2-run homer. Number 20 for Lindor, and it's 2-0 New York.
Great at bat.
Unloads one to deep right center. Back in the gap goes Senzel. He looks up and it's out of here. Jeff McNeil, his first home run against a left-hand pitcher this season. 3-0 New York.
He's pitched great. He really has. 0-2 coming.
And he struck him out. Carrasco strikes out the side in the 5th inning as he fans India for the 3rd time.
1-2 coming. And the curveball hit toward the middle of the diamond. India can't get it base hit.
Rough around third. He will score. Jeff McNeil with an RBI single. And the Mets tack one on. It's 4-0. 2-0 is hit well to right field. Marte gives it a courtesy look. But this ball's way out of here.
Whoa.
Off the facing in the front of the bridge, Jake Fraley with a two-run bomb, his third home run of the season, and that cuts the Mets' lead in half. It's now 4-2.
Definitely at a disadvantage here.
He rolls one to the right side, past India, base hit. Nito is in. Canna will score. Alonso to third. Darren Ruff comes through with a two-run single against the right-hander, and it's 6-2 New York.
Hard-working inning for Trevor May. Trying to put this inning to bed. May ahead on Lopez, 0-2.
Struck him out! Trevor May climbs the ladder. Three strikeouts in the inning, and he strands three in the top of the eighth.
Again, the 2-2.
Grounded slowly. Lindor charging, gloving, firing. In time, and the ball game is over.
And the Mets keep it rolling. Five straight wins, 14 of their last 16, as they beat the Reds tonight, 6-2.
Yes, what a big day for the Metropolitan.
Jacob,
you can't ask for anything better than that. And Cincinnati is the perfect opponent right now, but you can never take things lightly. So hopefully the party continues today at Citi Field. Now, the one thing that has become very, very apparent during this season is Buck Showalter. What a difference he's made. People say managers don't make a difference. I beg to differ. Buck Showalter has made a big difference in this ball club. You take the last few managers we have and compare them to Buck, well, there is no comparison. He just adapts so well to everything that's going on in this organization. He's calm. He realizes the ups. He realizes the downs. But he is the baseball mind I thought he was. And you surround him with talent and look what he can do. It is unbelievable. I always said he should have been the Yankee manager during the Yankee dynasty. Steinbrenner cut him loose before the party really began in the Bronx. And Joe Torre got all the credit. I think Buck could have done just as well. And now he has been gifted a team that gives him the best chance to win a championship since his 94 Yankees were denied their shot by a labor conflict that wiped out the postseason. The Yankees had the best record in the American League at 70-43, a 6.5 game lead in the AL East, and enough talent and chemistry to match up with the National League's best, who that year, as you recall, were the Montreal Expos, who were 74-40 at the time the strike happened. Paul O'Neill was hitting 359, Wade Boggs, 342. Jimmy Key was the only pitcher in the big leagues with 17 victories. It was a great pieces team, Showalter recalled. All the pieces fit, everything fit. I reminded them that in a Phoenix office building in February 1966, after he'd been forced out by George Steinbrenner and hired by the expansion Diamondbacks. They could have won it all. So Buck is used to, when you give Buck talent, he can do it. He can do it. Showalter originally got the call from Gene Stick Michael, who I don't think gets the credit for being the architect for all that, building that club together. And they had lost 273 games in the 3 years preceding Showalter's arrival in 1992. So Buck was unbelievable. And he did well with Arizona, too. He would take Arizona to playoff once and then the Orioles to the playoffs three times. But he never reached the World Series. Now, maybe this fall, it will happen for him. The Mets still have to put away the NL East and still have to deal with the Dodgers down the road. But the return of a dominant DeGrom now makes them look like a credible threat to book their first ticker tape parade since 1986. When you talk about DeGrom, Scherzer, and Diaz, they give Showalter three all-world arms that might even be too much for the Yankees to handle. And Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor are having huge years. Referring to the team's harmony in May, Showalter told the Post, "This might be the best group I've ever had." Before Carlos Carrasco secured his 13th victory on a rain-delayed Tuesday night, Showalter cited his players' everyday approach and his greatest satisfaction in the 72-39 season. And you could see the way the players have embraced the game, have embraced Showalter. It's been fun to watch, and it's been fun just following them every day. There is an energy that comes out every day when the Mets play. And that's something that winning teams do. They go out there, they want to play, and they play with enthusiasm. And there's no doubt about it. Showalter is the one most responsible for this culture change. He probably is the undisputed star of this team. It's easy to say the Mets are playing for their manager as much as they are playing for one another, that the old man is having a blast. You can tell Showalter loves these guys. Things aren't taken too seriously, but they play the game seriously. And they police themselves, and Showalter just has to keep riding the ship. He really doesn't scrutinize them. At the end of the game, he's the first one to congratulate them all the time. So there's a mutual respect there, without a doubt. Now, Showalter started as a minor league player 45 years ago. And everyone in Metville wanted him hired for his knowledge and his know-how. And so far, this has been a dream marriage. But even if the manager won't admit it, the game owes him a lot more. Torres 4 titles in 5 years right after Showalter left the Bronx. And Arizona beat the Yanks in a forever World Series Game 7 in the year right after Showalter left the desert. So sometimes timing is everything. Buck's best team, as it turned out, never got a shot at a parade. 28 years later, maybe, just maybe, the baseball gods are maybe going to correct things and make it right for Buck. I sure hope so. He deserves it. And how about Keith Hernandez? Keith is a straight shooter, and he said that he does not want to call Philadelphia Phillies games. And why, you may ask? Well, this weekend, when the Phillies come to Citi Field for a 3-game set, Hernandez will be in St. Louis celebrating the 40th anniversary of the 82 World Series championship team. As for the next weekend, when the Mets travel to Citizens Bank Park for 4 games, Hernandez says it's a scheduled off series. I've expressed to the front office, not the Met front office, our front office at SNY, that I hate doing Philly games. So I guess they gave him the series off. Gary Cohen was a bit incredulous at Hernandez's remarks. They asked the following up question that was basically on everybody's mind. You hate doing Philly games? Keith came out and said they never seem to disappoint. Over the years, and they're hot right now, so I'd like to see them. But as far as fundamentally, defensively, the Phillies have always been just not up to it. When Cohen suggested that Hernandez shoehorn an additional broadcast into his schedule to watch the Phillies, Hernandez quipped, "Don't hold your breath." A few innings later, seeing that he likes the city of Philadelphia in the ballpark, Hernandez added, "But the fundies just don't cut it with me." The Mets are 9-3 against the Phillies so far this season, highlighted by their miraculous 7-run ninth inning comeback in Philadelphia on May 5th. The Phillies, meanwhile, are playing their best baseball of the season, having won 10 of their last 11 games entering Tuesday. In turn, they have leapfrogged the Padres to gain control of the second wildcard spot in the National League. Entering play on Tuesday, the Mets held a 10-game lead over third-place Phillies in the NL East. So the Phillies are red hot. And it's going to be interesting to see what transpires here. Phillies could very well be playoff-bound and could meet the Mets somewhere down the line in the playoffs, too. And how about Jeff McNeil last night? People may not realize it, but it was a big game for Jeff because his home run in the fourth inning off Reds starter Mike Minor was his first homer off a left-handed pitcher in nearly 3 years. The previous one came September 3rd, 2019 against the Nationals' Ronis Ilias. Now, McNeil, he has always had a good track record with hitting lefties because he doesn't try to do too much. He puts a good swing on the ball, and he's hit 23 homers in a year. And I think people see a guy choking up in the bat that he'll ambush you in a hurry. He's hit a lot of big home runs for the Mets. He doesn't give in. He's chasing base hits every time he's in the box. You don't see him waste at bats. He's a career 291 hitter versus lefties, not far off from his 304 mark versus right-handers. But the homer Tuesday was just the fifth of his 44 career homers to come off a lefty pitcher. Against a left-hander, he is just trying really not to do too much. A little bit tougher at bat, but I got to a 1-0 count, and he was looking for a fastball and got some air under it, and it went out. as McNeil described his home run. Now, Met closer Edwin Diaz and his brother Alexis Diaz brought out the lineup cards for their respective teams before the game last night. Several of their family members have been in attendance at Citi Field during the series, many wearing specifically made split jerseys in half Met colors and logos and half Reds colors and logos. Now, Mark Hanna was hit by a pitch in the seventh inning, giving the Mets an MLB-high 76 hit-by-pitches, on pace to break the club record of 95, which was set in 2019. Showalter even said, "I thought we were falling off the pace. Now I guess we're back ahead of it again. It's something to do with the way they hit a little bit. It's also why they're good. There's something pretty good and obvious to me. Our guys don't budge." Now, Showalter said Tommy Hunter is expected to begin a minor league rehab assignment and should be on schedule to come back on time from the injured list on August 21st. Dom Smith, with his ankle injury, also continued his rehab assignment, with AAA Syracuse going 1-for-4. Now, last night, it was that dynamic duo again of Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco who propelled the Mets to their big win. Lindor blasted his 20th homer of the year to support Carrasco's 6 2/3 innings of two-run ball in that rain-delayed 6-2 win over the Reds. And Carrasco is looking like the old cookie that we'd hoped we were getting when we made the trade with Lindor. Carrasco even said he feels the same way he did in 2017-2018. And that's the way he's been feeling for the last 2 months. Now, in 2017-2018, Carrasco posted two seasons where he won a combined 35-16 with a 3.33 ERA and 457 strikeouts for Cleveland. And for Lindor, those 7 years with Cleveland, he's been unbelievable. And he goes out there and he plays hard. And it's really good to see Lindor really blossoming this year. And Carrasco extended a stellar run of outings by the Mets' refortified rotation since co-aces Max Scherzer and Jacob DeGrom rejoined Showalter's projected quintet of starters. The 35-year-old right-hander allowed 2 earned runs on 7 hits with 1 walk and 9 strikeouts, post his team-best 13th victory of the year, 13-4. He also improved to 5-0 with a 1.69 ERA over 7 starts since his last loss on June 28th against the Astros. He's been a good major league pitcher for a long time, but he hasn't been this healthy in a while. It's one of those things that it could be a shot in the arm these last 2 months, and he may be the old Carrasco again coming down the stretch. Looks like he's at peace of mind with his results, and he's in attack mode. Overall, the Mets starters have recorded a minuscule staff ERA of 2.23 over 31 games since Scherzer returned from an oblique injury on July 5th, including 2 recent starts by DeGrom and 8-inning gem Monday by Chris Bassett, with Taijuan Walker going for his series sweep today, this afternoon at Citi Field. It seems like every one of these guys is pitching great, and they just want to do and follow suit as to what everybody else is doing. Now, after being limited to 53 2/3 innings over 12 starts in his first season with the Mets due to hamstring injury suffered in the spring, Carrasco, 88 pitches, now has thrown 124 3/3 innings this year, his most since 2018, and second on the team with Bassett's 130. With leadoff batter Brandon Nimmo receiving a rare game off, McNeil added a solo shot for the first-place Mets, who won 15 of their last 18 games to prove 72-39. Deadline pickup Michael Givens, Trevor Moore, and Seth Lugo recorded his final 7 outs in relief for Carrasco. Lindor's 2-run shot to left off Reds lefty Mike Minor in a 3rd inning provided the game's first runs. In the process, the 341 million switch hitter became the first shortstop in franchise history to record 20 homer seasons. McNeil ripped his 7th homer of the year, a solo shot to center in the 4th, for hitting a run-scoring single, chased Minor in the 6th for a 4-0 lead. Now, the Reds reached Carrasco for singles in each of the first 3 innings and a walk in the 4th without scoring a run. He struck out the side in the 5th and retired 3 batters on just 6 pitches in the 6th, where Reds got on board on Jake Fraley's 2-run blast to right center with 1 out in the 7th. 2-run singles later in the inning by Austin Romine and Jonathan India prompted Showalter to summon Givens, who whiffed Nick Senzel to escape the inning. The Mets recouped those 2 runs in the bottom half of the on a bases-loaded single by Darren Ruff, who who went 2-for-4 to raise his average to .333 since he was acquired from the Giants at the trade deadline. Ruffin fellow acquisitions Daniel Vogelbach and Tyler Naquin have combined to hit .338 with 4 homers and 18 RBIs and 80 at-bats. I guess you can say they have been good pickups so far. And everyone in this lineup is hitting right now. They're a dangerous team, the Mets. They're a good team. And I think they know that. So things are looking good in Metville. Now, with everything looking good, the one thing that the Mets are going to have to realize that with this potential dream season, they've actually reached a higher gear in recent weeks, and the following players have been among those who have stood out. Edwin Diaz, in the midst of a season that could earn him Cy Young and MVP votes. Jacob deGrom, whose return to Citi Field this past Sunday was among the most electric days in a 13-year history of the ballpark. Chris Bassitt, whose ability to provide length has been just as impressive as his ability to keep runs off the board. Brandon Nimmo, who has set the tone at the top of the lineup. Now, what do all these players have in common? They're all expected to become free agents after the season. In addition to Diaz, DeGrom, Bassitt, and Nimmo, Taiwan Walker, who seems very likely to decline a $6 million player option, and a large chunk of the Mets' bullpen, including Adam Ottavino and Trevor May, are among the others about to hit free agency. That doesn't mean that the Met fans shouldn't enjoy the ride they're on, one that hopefully won't end until early November. At the same time, it's clear that the team could look drastically different next season, and with a significant amount of money already committed to the payroll for 2023, it's fair to wonder how many of their pending free agents the Mets can and will retain, I should say. One would think that bringing back Diaz is an absolute no-brainer, especially given the uncertainty elsewhere in the bullpen. And he recently said that he would like to return. Then there's Bassitt, whose contract contains a mutual $19 million option for 2023. Perhaps there's a small chance that option is exercised, but it seems very likely that Bassitt would be able to get a deal for 3 or 4 years around the average annual value on the open market. What about Nimmo? He has been the perfect table setter for the Mets since 2017. Like Diaz, he's on record saying that he's open to an extension. Then, of course, there's the DeGrominator, Jacob DeGrom. His situation is the most intriguing and possibly the most difficult to predict. Even before returning from more than a year away from a big league mound, DeGrom started a few times and he was going to opt out of the contract after the season. And given the relatively low average annual value with a 5-year extension, DeGrom signed with the Mets before the 2019 season, makes all the sense in the world for him to opt out if he stays healthy. The best pitcher in baseball deserves to be paid like the best pitcher in baseball. But will that be with the Mets? DeGrom has stated his desire to be a career Met, and he said in spring training that his plan would be to opt out and stay in constant contact with the Mets, with hope being to return. Will the Mets be comfortable giving him something like $180 million for 4 years, taking him through his age 37 season? Will it take even more than that? Does DeGrom, as some rumblings have suggested, have his eye on a more serene location than New York? And what might happen between now and the end of the season? It's close to impossible to envision a scenario where the Mets get DeGrom locked up before the season ends. But is an in-season extension possible with someone like Diaz or Bassitt? When it comes to the offseason, the DeGrom domino will likely color much of what the Mets do. If DeGrom does not return, it would be prudent to make a strong effort to re-sign both Bassitt and Walker, especially with the Mets not having any MLB-ready pitching prospects on the horizon for 2023. One thing that should help the Mets is the fact that they could have 2 cornerstone position players, catcher Francisco Alvarez and third baseman Brett Beatty, ready to be lineup mainstays by opening day 2023 or soon after. The presence of Alvarez and Beatty, who will be making the year league minimum at first, could allow for greater flexibility when it comes to the Mets handing out multiple extensions to some of the players listed above. For those who will now remind me about Stephen Cohen's billions, I'll note that while he can exceed the highest luxury tax levels, and probably will at times, he will not spend with reckless abandon and have a payroll that's perennially in the $300 million range. So tough choices will have to be made. For now, the Mets and their fans should embrace the ride the 2022 team is taking them on. But as that ride continues, the intrigue will build over which of the above core pieces will be in Queens in 2023 and beyond. Now it's time for today's Mets trivia question. Here's the question. Who were the last two Mets to record multiple 100 RBI seasons in back-to-back seasons? Lock in your answer. We'll be back at the end of the podcast to tell you how you did. And now it's time to celebrate some Met birthdays for today and some transactions. It's loaded, the birthday celebration, so get ready to write all these down. Having a birthday today is Pete Gibbrian. He was the director of minor league operations from 75 to 79 and director of scouting for the Mets in 1980. Also celebrating a birthday today, Johnny Lou was born this date in 1939. He was a Met in 65 through 67. 65, he had 417 at-bats. So, Johnny Lewis, happy birthday. Happy birthday to Gerald Williams, who was with us in 2004 and 2005. An outfielder, as you recall, who also played with the Yankees. And happy birthday to Chuck Carr, who was with us in 1990 and 1991. And happy birthday to Brandon Lyon, born this day in 1979, and he pitched 37 games for us in 2013. And happy birthday to Wilson Ramos, our starting catcher in 2019. Had a pretty good year at 14 homers and 73 RBIs for us in 2019. And Matt Dan Decker, one of the better center fielders defensively I ever saw for the Mets. He was with us from 2013 to 2014 and came back for a cup of coffee in 2018. Happy birthday, Matt Den Decker. And happy birthday to Anthony Banda, who was with us last year for 5 games. He pitched 7 innings. Number 77, Anthony Banda. On this date, unfortunately, we lost Cookie Lavaghetto, who was an original coach for the 62 Mets, and he was with us in 63 also. And we purchased the contract of Jermaine Allensworth from the Kansas City Royals on this date in 1998 and released Jeff Duncan on this date in August 10th, 2005. There you have it. There's your transactions, your birthdays, everything you need to know about this date in Met history. And what else is going on in Met history? We put it in the Facebook group. If you're not a member of the Facebook group, you really do have to join. It's New York Mets Baseball Way of Life on Facebook. So if you're a Facebook member, check it out. We have great content on there every day. Good stuff on there. Like we asked, what is the first thing that pops in your head when I say Tommy Agee? Warren Handy said, solid center fielder, good base runner. And Craig Prager said, not only does Tommy Agee hit a homer in Game 3 of the 69 World Series, but he also had 2 great run-saving defensive plays in the Mets' 5-0 win over the Orioles. Tommy was one of a kind. And as always, we have Mike Fried giving us great recaps and previews of Met games.
You're well
so
aware.
You do have to check it out. And then we have Chris DeRosa, an audio clip of a video clip of Chris DeRosa of MLB Central saying why the Mets are the team to beat this year. You want to check that clip out. Now here's the answer to yesterday's Mets trivia question. Who are the two Mets to record multiple 100 RBI seasons? Well, the correct answers are Carlos Beltran and Carlos Delgado in 2007 and 2008. Congrats to John Tierney on being the first to submit that correct answer. And that's going to end up it's going to conclude our podcast for today. And we just want to remind you that today is an afternoon tilt. It's on SNY and it's TJ Zuch versus Taijuan Walker. Zuch making his debut for the Reds and Taijuan Walker 9-3 with a 3.45 ERA going for the Mets. We'll be back here tomorrow to talk about it. So check us out tomorrow. A little bit cooler the weather today. Nice to see. But hopefully the Mets continue to stay hot. And we'll be here tomorrow to talk about it. Once again, thanks for listening. And thanks for all your support. Enjoy your day. Enjoy the afternoon game. And let's go Mets.
Meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life. Because the Mets are really sucking the ball. Knocking those home runs over the wall. East side, west side. Everybody's coming down to meet the Mets. Oh.
along the streets. Where do they go?
To meet the Mets!
Oh, they're hollering, they're cheering, and they're jumping in their seats. Where do they go?
To meet the Mets!
All the fans are true to the orange and blue. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life.